Welcome once again to the only show on international media that is dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. We have a toll-free number for you, 800-630-7858, and on our website, as you've no doubt been able to see, we have a live chat. So just register your name on the emotionalpro.com site and join us on the chat. Ask questions, make comments, and listen and notice what other people are saying also. You know, we're all aware of the tremendous explosion of technology and technological information, but have you been paying attention to all that we've been learning about the human body lately? Even on this program, we've talked to you about how it's been discovered that the connective tissue in the human body acts as a huge crystalline communication device. We've explored distant healing and even done some on the air. And we've talked about how your beliefs and emotions directly influence the state of your health. There's so much new information, and it's no longer conjectural, as many people said 20 or 25 years ago. Now it's increasingly based on objective research data. And there is no one who's more dedicated and complete in sifting through all that data and research and bringing it to us in a form we can use than Dawson Church, who is our guest today. In November of 2007, he shared material with us from his book, The Genie in Your Genes, and he's back today with another book, Soul Medicine, in which he's aiming to help us all awaken our inner blueprint for abundant health and energy. In Dr. Larry Dawson's notes, he remarks that future generations looking back will regard conventional medicine during the 20th century as being as limited as five-finger arithmetic. A new medicine is arising, one which embraces spirituality and consciousness as emphatically as conventional medicine has dismissed them. Dawson Church has edited or authored over 200 books in the fields of health, psychology, and spirituality. He's collaborated with many of the leading voices of our time, such as Larry Dawsey and Bernie Siegel and Caroline Miss and Jeannie Achterberg and Neil Donald Walsh, Gay Hendricks, Joan Borenko, Mary Catherine Bateson, Andrew Harvey, Houston Smith, Barry Sears, and John Gray, just to mention a few. He has a doctorate in integrative healthcare from Holos University under the mentorship of distinguished neurosurgeon Norm Shealy, who is co-author with him on Soul Medicine. And he went to receive a postgraduate PhD in natural medicine and a clinical certification in energy psychology. He's also the founder of Soul Medicine Institute, which is a nonprofit institution dedicated to education and research into science-based medical interventions, which use consciousness and energy as primary modalities. Dawson Church, welcome back to Full Power Living.
Eileen, it's wonderful to be here and wonderful to feel your energy and your spirit permeating everything you say. Thank you.
Yes. You know, we're in such a big, gigantic change in the way we understand about how our bodies work. And in your book, you quote Irvin Laszlo, who says we're shifting from matter to energy as the primary reality. Will you talk more about what this shift is?
Well, many years ago, we didn't think that energy played that big a role in healing, and the main focus of research in healing was on organic compounds and cell biological processes. So we focused research for many, many years in medicine on understanding how cells worked, how the chemical reactions within them took place, and there was an explosion of knowledge about the mechanics of our bodies. And this is wonderful, very, very powerful information. But what got lost in the process was the whole sense of healing and life as a mystery and of the immanent and spiritual aspects of our being, the energy part of ourselves. And around, I suppose, the late 70s and the early 80s, is when this really began to reverse. And for the first time, we began to see things like prayer studies, studying the role of prayer scientifically and seeing what the effect was on the human body. And, for example, a wonderful researcher in Canada did a series of experiments showing that if people in different spiritual and emotional states hold seeds in their hands, that the biological properties of those seeds changed. We began to realize there was this link between consciousness, energy, and matter. And that link has, at the same time, had this explosion of information about how we work biologically. We're now beginning to understand that if we ignore the side of us that is transcendent, that is spiritual, that is our energy side, that is our hearts, our thoughts, our beliefs, all of these things, then we really only have part of the picture. We only have a partial treatment plan, and that only when we work with all of these aspects of our humanness can we be fully in our range of abilities to both boost our health and also address any problems we might have in our health. So we're coming to this big integration now of the spiritual aspect, the emotional aspect, and the physical aspect of healing.
Wow. Well, in the past, as you note in soul medicine, most cultures have combined healing with some form of faith or soul involvement, but in our Western scientific or allopathic medicine, soul and physical healing have gotten separated. And I want to know a little bit more about the split. How did that happen? And I want to explore just a little bit. What's the effect of that?
Yeah. Well, how it came about was that when we began to focus during the Enlightenment in the 15th, 16th century on, we discovered things like gravity, we discovered things like magnetism, electricity, and so on. And these were very exciting discoveries because things that had previously seemed like magic to us. Why was a lodestone, L-O-D-E, lodestone, why was it able to attract metallic objects to it? So these things seemed like magical properties. And suddenly we found ourselves having scientific explanations for them. Why are inherited characteristics passed from one generation to the next? Until Gregor Mendel gave us the laws of inheritance, we didn't know this. They seemed like just a really mysterious thing. So science was able to illuminate these parts of the world and give us rational, satisfying answers. And this was a really strong social movement. But what happened was it went too far to the point where we forgot all about that mysterious life energy that animates everything. So we had this big split that happened around 500 years ago. And now we've sort of reached the end, I think, of the road of being able to rely just on those technological and rational arguments, and we're now beginning to realize we're leaving out a huge chunk of our being. It's not satisfying to be, it's very satisfying intellectually to have these reasons, but it ultimately doesn't satisfy our souls and our spiritual yearnings or help our health. Now that we're understanding that a vibrant spiritual connection actually assists in healing, the attention is swinging back onto those things. So that's how we got into this sort of imbalance we're in. And I see us now moving in the opposite direction as well.
Wonderful. I want to talk a little more later about some of the autoimmune illnesses, but just to make note now that one of the other things I think that has happened is that modern medicine as it's practiced doesn't really have very much to offer in the way of healing illnesses like that. But science.
In the book, Eileen, too, we try and, Norm Sheedy and I try and give people a rough guide as to which conditions to use conventional medicine for and which conditions to focus primarily on things they can do themselves, alternative medicine, or a combination of the two. So it's possible to actually distinguish and say, you know, if you have these sorts of conditions, then you know, clearly if you have a broken leg or appendicitis, go to the hospital, get conventional treatment. But if you have something like chronic fatigue or some of the other autoimmune conditions, then you definitely need to look at alternative solutions as well as the conventional ones. We try and give you a sort of a basic guide to when to do each and how to make them work together.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what's the scientific or research basis for the closing of the gap that we're seeing between scientific medicine and soul medicine?
I think one of the huge, huge, important studies that was done that just when I read the study, I was staggered by the strength of the evidence. And I don't know if you're aware of the study before. We talked about it before on the show, Eileen, but it's called the ACE study, or ACE. Are you familiar with that study?
Not from the title, but probably once you tell me the details, I'll go, oh, yes, I remember that.
Okay. Well, ACE stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences, ACE. And it was done by Kaiser Permanente, which is a big HMO based in California but has branches in different states. And it involved a huge, huge population of 17,400 adults. So we're talking about a massive 10-year study, okay? And they looked at the link between emotional trauma and physical disease. They looked at people who had high levels of trauma in their childhood and then what their disease profile was later on. And they found that there was a strong correlation between adverse childhood experiences and cancer, heart disease, hypertension, high blood pressure, diabetes, depression, and a whole host of other psychological and physical illnesses as adults. So this was the first massive study to show us, I think quite conclusively, that unresolved emotional trauma shows up in the body as disease at some point. Not only that, but the striking thing about the time period here was that the median age of the sample in the study was 56 years old. So these traumas had happened 50 years earlier, and yet they were still affecting the health of people a half century later. So it showed that time does not heal, and unless we heal our emotional traumas, they will show up later on. So this was, the first enormous piece of evidence that really put to rest the question of, do our feelings, do our emotional states affect our bodies? It turns out they affect our bodies tremendously strongly. So there are lots of other pieces of evidence, but this was a big one that showed us the link between emotions and health.
Well, and as we were talking before we got started with the show today, I mentioned to you, so I'll say it on air too, that my childhood was very much like that. I lost my birth mother before I was three. I moved from pillar to post, lived in 14 different homes, and went to 17 different schools before I got out of high school. I had sexual and physical abuse and a host of other things. And as I told you, I make the joke that my childhood was one long cold because I was ill as a result of that. And yet now I'm about to turn 66 in a couple of months, and I haven't had a wide-spectrum antibiotic in over 30 years. I live on a slug of vitamins, and I think positive thoughts, and I've done a lot of an emotional healing, but I have none of those things that you were talking about. I'm incredibly healthy. And is the key to that possible? I mean, it could be my great genetics too, although I know even that can be, isn't a solid factor. But could it be that just working with your emotional stuff and focusing on changing your beliefs and staying positive and taking care of yourself, being conscious, can do that?
Has a huge effect. I'll give you one example. And again, all of the things I say in my book, Soul Medicine, are drawn from just standard conventional medical research. Even though these claims may seem startling that our thoughts and feelings and beliefs can affect us, there is a study to back up every single thing I say. Nothing I'm saying here is speculation. But one of the most interesting pieces of research done, I think, was done by a friend of mine called Gail Ironson, who's the head of behavioral medicine at the University of Miami. And Gail did several studies, actually, along this theme. But she did a 4-year study of AIDS patients, and she was measuring how fast the AIDS virus was proliferating in their blood, and also the rate at which their immune system was decreasing. So typically with AIDS, the number of AIDS viruses goes up, and these immune markers go down. What she found, though, was that patients who had certain beliefs had very different results. And when she got all of her study data compiled after 4 years of studying these AIDS patients, she found that there was one belief that correlated the most strongly with both the rise in the number of AIDS viruses and the drop in the immune markers, and that was the quality of the patient's belief in God. Those patients that believe in a benevolent God or a loving God, and those patients that believe in a punishing God or a harsh God, had completely different health outcomes. Those who believe in a punishing God, their immune markers dropped at 3 times the rate of those that believe in a loving God. This is an enormous effect. So it turns out that in these kinds of, now we're asking the right research questions and tracking these things like beliefs. I mean, 30 years ago, we never thought to ask the patient about their beliefs. It was thought to be a ridiculous idea to study the link between belief and physiology. Now, these newer studies are showing these tremendously strong links, even between a single belief, like whether you believe in a loving God or a punishing God, and your health outcomes. So yeah, the evidence is accumulating, and it is striking, and the effect size, the size of the effects is enormous. I'm in the middle of a study now of cortisol. We're looking at people's cortisol level. That's your main stress hormone marker. And so if you are very stressed, you make lots of cortisol. If you are less stressed, you make less cortisol. And as your thoughts and feelings change over the course of the day, your cortisol secretion changes. And we're finding that people's cortisol, if they get this energy therapy called EFT, it drops dramatically. It drops double the amount if they get just regular psychotherapy or no treatment at all. So we're finding that these psychologically, spiritually, and energetically based treatments can have not just a little effect, but a doubling or a tripling of the physiological effect of other things. So yeah, this is strong medicine.
I love that. Now, I want you to talk about this paragraph from your book. You say, energy is the basic framework of the universe. Life energy is simply one aspect of consciousness. And then you talk about the study of electromagnetism being exciting because with the right experimental designs, it allows us to detect the influence of unseen energy, soul presence, and consciousness. And you say soul medicine is introducing the medical establishment to a new model of health, one that understands that energy and consciousness play a vital role in healing, and the body's electromagnetic field is a means through which biochemistry and physical anatomy interact with these unseen energies. That is a mouthful. Can you expand on that just a little bit?
It is a mouthful. I'm making a mental note to simplify that paragraph for the next edition. Uh-huh. But yeah, energy is a link, because as, for example, I had a whole bunch of people hooked up here last weekend to EEG machines, but as our thoughts change, our pattern, our brain function changes dramatically. Think about somebody you love. Your heart rate variability changes. Your cortisol level may well drop. Your level of cell repair hormones might rise. Your immune markers might increase. Think about God. Have a spiritual transformational experience. Have a transcendent experience. Have a deep spiritual awakening. And you might find all kinds of physiological patterns, like your EEG patterns changing. So as people, and these things don't happen, you know, like in a year. Literally, I hook you up to an EEG here in our office, and as your thoughts change, as I ask you to think about a person you love, or your favorite pet, or I ask you to think about a childhood trauma, we will see immediate swings in these EEG readings. So your brain's electrical energy patterns and signatures are changing dramatically. Either you're putting yourself into what we call the fight-or-flight mode, where you're telling your whole, all your body's organ systems to get very stressed. You're telling your muscles to prepare for action. You're telling your circulatory system to send lots of blood to your outer organs and so on. Or you're de-stressing yourself, one of the two things. But as your thoughts change, as your feelings change, as your heart changes, if I say, get into your heart, suddenly people will show a big shift in their electrical energy patterns and their brain functions. So, yeah, energy is this very good measure of where we are and how we're shifting.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're up for a break right now. What's the best place for people to go to get more information about getting the Soul Medicine book and also to find out more about you and your work?
The best spot is the book's website, which is soulmedicine.net. And they can also take a little test there called the Soul Connection Inventory. So that's a fun place to go.
Okay, soulmedicine.net. So be sure to check that out to find out more about Dawson Church, Dr. Dawson Church. And consider getting his book, Soul Medicine. We'll be talking more on healing and emotions when we return. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, and you're listening to Full Power Living. We're back now on Full Power Living with Dr. Dawson Church, who is co-author with neurosurgeon Dr. Norman Shealy of a book called Soul Medicine, which we're discussing today. Dawson, I note that you've authored or co-authored over 200 books. That's an absolutely amazing production, and I know you're younger than me even. You've also done all this training like at Holos University, and I'm just curious about how you look at your personal overall mission.
Well, let me just tell you a little story first concerning yours, Eileen, and when you mentioned about your childhood and all those challenges, I can really relate because my father was an evangelist, a minister, and he used to travel around and be one place for 6 months, another place for 6 months, and we'd be back in England, but then we'd be in the U.S., and so we were just all over the place. And also lots of stresses, lots of cultural alienation. And so I decided, when I was reading about this whole idea that there is a quantum reality and that attention shifts that reality, and that in this construct, there's no actual past or present, there's only the now, I decided to go back and actually shift my childhood. So now when I tell stories of my childhood, I emphasize how many cultures we went to and how exciting it was to see new places. And I've told myself a new story, and I don't know if I've really done anything to actually shift things, but it makes me happier. So I simply just decided to make up, the best stories I can about my childhood in the hopes not carrying all those traumas forward.
And, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. You know, my son,
story, you know?
My son recently said to me, "Okay, Mom, enough of that. We know you had a tough childhood. Let's not talk about it anymore. You're not that person anymore." And it was such a great gift.
Yeah, go back and rewrite your history.
Yeah. So I'm already amazed at the changes in procedure that have occurred in medicine since I was young. For example, when I was young, a person had an operation. They ended up with a scar from the incision that was several inches long. And now surgeons do even heart surgery as microsurgery with people ending up with scars that are less than an inch long. You know, what kind of medicine are we heading toward here?
Much smaller medicine. There are nanobots under development that will be the size of a pill capsule, which can be inserted into your body. They're guided via a very advanced MRI, so the magnetic guided through your body, and they have little arms on them and can do microsurgery. So we're headed for ever more sophistication in our ability to mechanically repair cells. At the same time as we are seeing this phenomenal advance in technological medicine, we're also seeing this understanding that when I shift my thoughts and feelings, when I have a spiritual experience, when I think about my life transcendentally, that a huge number of biochemical changes happen in my body. So I'm, in effect, doing genetic engineering, electromechanical engineering, on my own physiology as I choose my thoughts and feelings. So we're seeing these two big trends happening, one of better and better technology and also a greater and greater understanding that ultimately, while technology can help us, we have a huge amount of influence over our health.
Yeah. Certainly we do. So I want to get back to the role of emotions in health that you talked about before. Thank you for that answer. And in soul medicine, you make the statement that fear, anxiety, guilt, anger, and depression are the major negative emotions that affect our health. And you say that this, in part at least, is because they evoke a stress reaction. Exactly, from your research, exactly what do these emotions like fear, anxiety, guilt, anger, and depression do to the physical system that leads us to illness?
Bad things. If you knew the effect, if you could sit where I sit, Eileen, and watch what happens to your cortisol, watch what happens to your heart rate variability, watch what happens to your EEG pattern, your EKG pattern, when you think a negative thought, I tell you, you would never think another negative thought in your life again. When you sit in a lab and see what happens in your body and the chemical, the destructive chemical processes you unleash when you have a negative thought, you would be squeaky clean in your mental hygiene. I tell you, it is so important. And when you see, it's nothing like having people sit in front of a monitor and watch the shifting pattern of what happens as they think and feel. And when you remember an old insult, an old wound, an old resentment, you are doing, I don't know what you're doing to the other person you resent, but you are doing terrible things to your own body. And all of these, you shift all of your positive processes like cell repair into reverse, and your body actually cannibalizes the precursors it needs to repair your cells to build the chemicals it needs to create the stress response. So we are starting to become acutely aware of the importance of these things. That's why, because I mentioned Kaiser Permanente before, but Kaiser now offers Qigong classes, yoga classes, healthy baby classes, weight loss classes, stop smoking classes, all kinds of things to just help you shift your emotional and spiritual health, because they realize that those things are enormously important in your health picture. You know, when you think about a drug you take, a COX-2 inhibitor, for example, or some drug you prescribe, the way we look for a drug in the pharmaceutical industry is you look for a molecule that will affect another molecule, a very targeted interaction of two molecules. When you think or feel, you are affecting hundreds of thousands of different molecules in your body at the same time. The quality of what you think and feel and your spiritual experiences and your attitude and your beliefs, these things are affecting enormously large numbers of genes, of hormones, of neurotransmitters, the whole way your nervous system works. So these are the real big leverage points for your health. And those individual molecular drugs are wonderful when they're appropriate, but how healthy you are has far more to do with how you are, what choices you make, what choices you choose to harbor in your thoughts and feelings and spiritual life. Those are really where health begins.
Mm-hmm. One of the principles that I've worked with for years that I learned in the spiritualist church, interestingly enough, in San Anselmo, is that what you pay attention to, you feed energy to, and it tends to grow. So a way that I hear what you're saying is that, indeed, you pay attention to the negatives in life, and it's antithetical to growing, and it actually just helps you grow the bad things or the worst things.
Absolutely. Whatever you obsess about and can pay attention to, you shift reality in that direction.
Uh-huh. Well, I want to explore just a little bit. You say a lot of, in soul medicine, you say a lot of researchers and practitioners are pointing out, as many of the esoteric people that I've known for years have done, that our energy systems get out of balance as a precursor to the development of illness at all types. So,
that's a very interesting thing, that not only does, when we have an illness, our electromagnetic bodies and signals will change in our cells, our organs, but what has been shown in some very early research, since the 1940s, actually, 1950s, is that even before an illness shows up organically in our cells, it can show up energetically in our energy body. And so we're, you know, again, that's why the effects of these thoughts, feelings, and emotions are so powerful, because they're changing our energy body, and then only later on usually does the effect show up in our cells.
Uh-huh. So now, earlier you mentioned Gary Craig and EFT, and for those who aren't aware, Gary Craig has popularized this seemingly crazy system of tapping on certain points in our body, humming happy birthday, counting backwards, and tapping some more that he calls EFT, which is emotional freedom technique. I've worked with it. It's amazing. What you in soul medicine, you talk about the fact that such methods as EFT are following the meridians and that they are working with the electrical system of the body. Exactly how does that happen, Dawson?
Yeah, EFT is the subject of several randomized controlled scientific trials I'm doing right now. And what we do is we bring people in, we test them, we have them get a brief EFT session, and then we test them again and see what the shifts are. And typical shifts we're seeing, I mentioned earlier that their cortisol drops by about double what it otherwise would, so that their main stress hormone drops dramatically. So that's one big feature. I just got, in the last week, got some very interesting results back on the heart rate variability, which is another marker of how stressed we are. And the EFT group had much better results for heart rate variability after treatment than the group that got conventional psychotherapy. So EFT, just a simple tapping routine, 14 acupressure points, really affects us physiologically in a big way. Now, it may look weird to be tapping these points, but you can feel the difference very, very quickly. And even with people who've undergone severe traumas, like now I'm doing the EFT project with Iraq veterans and Afghanistan veterans and Vietnam veterans, veterans generally, and we're giving them 6 one-hour sessions of EFT, and we're measuring their levels of anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and so on, before and after EFT, and the results initially are remarkable. They're just they're getting enormously better after just 6 sessions of EFT. So again, it's valuable in the treatment of these kinds of conditions.
Yes, and these are lasting changes too, as you note in your book. Recently, we had Dr. Bradley Nelson, who wrote a book called The Emotion Code, and he's doing essentially the same thing using refrigerator magnets. So you can work with magnets and you can work with the electricity both. Is that correct?
Any way you change your energy body is useful. For some people, maybe prayer. For other people, it might be meditation. Some might find energy medicine or EFT useful. Some might use mechanical things like magnetism. You know, for example, there are new machines called pulsed electromagnetic systems, or PEMS machines, and they've been very useful in treating depression. But I always, and I like this technology, things like PEMS machines and so on, but I have to say I really advocate, rather than the high-tech, going straight to the high-tech method, I say go to the high-touch method first. Do the thing you can do yourself. Don't have to wait to get into some specialized office where there's a $60,000 machine. Find out something you can use yourself right here and now in the moment when you're stressed. Because, you know, if you get stressed today on Thursday, don't wait till you have an appointment with your pulse electromagnetic therapist in 2 weeks' time, and don't hold that stress for 2 weeks. Find something you can do right now, whether it's a walk in nature, whether it's deep breathing, whether it's quickie meditation, whether it's EFT. Do something right now to release that stress you feel. Don't let it linger for a long time, because your body is responding to that stress then for those 2 weeks and building in that stress, all those stress responses into your physiological functioning, which you don't want.
That is really sage advice. I've got something I'm kind of struggling with here, and I was hoping you could help me with it. In my work as a therapist, my understanding is that emotions are tools. They are given to us to help us navigate life. For example, if you're afraid of something, you need to be cautious and check things out. If you feel love, that tells you to come closer. Anger says you've got an incorrect picture of how things are supposed to be on the world, and you need to change it in the world. So I teach people to work with emotions in order to learn from them, but these energy techniques seem to just offer an opportunity to release them. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts or awareness or have had discussions about whether people are sidestepping learning they could get from emotions by doing something like EFT.
Yeah, I think the other piece of the picture, which I would emphasize there, is that your emotions can be signals to navigate through life. If you're able to be experiencing the emotions you're feeling right in the present moment, that many of our emotions are frozen responses from our childhood. So when I, for example, have a conflict with John at my office today, I'm not really responding emotionally to John or responding today or to the real conflict going on here. It's just that John has triggered my memories of my Uncle Jeffrey, and when I was 3 years old, he turned around from the table and didn't notice I was there and clobbered me in the head with his elbow, okay? So I didn't like Uncle Jimmy then, and I blamed him, and I was hurt, and I cried, and no one comforted me. So I had that negative experience way back then, and something about John today in the office reminds me of that, and so I'm responding with the emotional intensity inappropriately based on those old experiences. So I think we get stuck very early into a whole host of emotional responses which made perfect sense when you were 2 or 3 or 4. But now that you're 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 or 60, if you're still acting out those early responses, all you're doing is you're wearing that groove deeper. You're simply taking that emotional distress and reinforcing it by today's experience. We find this very much with our Iraq veterans who were studying, that they had all these negative experiences in Iraq, all these traumatic incidents, but they tended to have really traumatic childhoods as well. And when they got discharged from the service, they may well have recreated chaos in their lives in a whole bunch of ways, financially or in their marriages or work or whatever, and so they now have high stress post-deployment as well. And so our emotions can be a guide if they're clear and if they're present moment, but our emotions actually can be very misleading if they're based on those old emotional responses that we got jammed into when we had no real ability to be discerning or to make conscious decisions when we were very young. And I think that's where people keep sabotaging themselves. We all know the people who, for example, get into dysfunctional relationships with the opposite sex, and then they get rid of the relationship with the person who's beating them or abusing them, and they find another person who's equally abusive because they got this pattern stuck in their head from a very early age. The only way you change is if you're able to clear those early negative traumas, then you can really be present. So now when John in the office says this thing that triggers me, I can see John, I can hear John, I can be with John, I can be with the present moment, and I'm not responding out of what happened with my Uncle Jimmy when I was 4 years old.
Uh-huh. And that is one of the key things that something like the Emotion Code or EFT does, which is to release those trapped, long-held emotions, and you don't even necessarily have to identify what they were.
No, a lot of them are pre-conscious, and you just release them. And what EFT does, things like cognitive behavioral therapy are also very useful, CBT, but what happens is when we combine the tapping or some kind of body-centered experience with the understanding, the mental understanding of this emotional trauma, then that's really powerful. Just thinking about this doesn't usually change us or change us very fast or very deep. But when we think about this and we do this tapping, that's what seems to change our physiological response in just a few moments. Like we'll take veterans who've had some sort of severe war trauma, and they're so upset that they can't even speak about it. One Vietnam veteran, he had an incident where a teenage boy was walking toward his platoon, and as the boy got closer, this Vietnam veteran realized that he was holding a grenade, and the pin was out of the grenade. So he was going to blow out this man's platoon. And so the soldier said to him, "Stop!" And the boy kept on walking. He said, "Stop again." He yelled at him. and the kid just kept on walking. And then he fired a shot at the kid's feet, and the kid kept walking toward his platoon, and then he killed the kid. Okay, so he's had this nightmares. He can't even think about this for 30 years. But then he does EFT, and when he recalls the incident and he taps, suddenly the trauma is gone. And so whereas before he was reporting a very high level of stress and trauma around this horrible incident, now he's able to talk about this and say, you know, I realize now that it was only me shooting this kid that saved all of my buddies. So people can start to think again and get their lives back when they aren't trapped into these old things. And it only happens when they combine the recall of the trauma with some kind of physiological stimulus, a physical stimulus like the tapping. Those two things seem to deactivate these emotional traumas much faster than just thinking about them or processing them does.
I am so grateful that you're working on this, because I know there have been enormous numbers of people who've been shell-shocked and PTSD'd and all sorts of things over the years as a result of being in wartime, and I'm really glad we're finding something that can actually help. We're up to another break, and we've been talking today with Dr. Dawson Church, who's co-author of a new book entitled Soul Medicine. And we'll have more with Dr. Church when we return. You're listening to Full Power Living, and I'm Eileen Dillon. We've been talking today with Dawson Church, who has a new book called Soul Medicine, and finding out more about the separation of soul and healing that's now in the process of reversal, of not being separated, and the shape that medicine's going to be taking for the future, which is, I think, vitally important for all of us. So, Dawson, I wanted to just chat with you for a second. You've probably been aware of this too, but as many of my listeners know, I'm married to a neurosurgeon, Dr. Robert Fink, and I've been around him for the last 15 years and gone to neurosurgical conferences and so forth. And in addition to all the research that's being made, I've noticed some specific changes. For example, nearly half of the neurosurgeons that were practicing 15 years ago in California, in the state of California, are no longer practicing. I talked with my husband this morning, and we estimated that in a 40-mile radius from my home, there used to be 14 neurosurgeons actively practicing, and now there are 4.
Wow.
And they've been driven out by HMOs, by high medical malpractice, by just having their style cramped where they can't really feel like they have enough time to spend with patients. And it almost seems like there are forces conspiring to remove a lot of medical specialists, almost like it's making way for soul medicine, energy medicine sorts of things. Have you noticed any of that? Do you have any comment on it?
Well, clearly, the whole health and healthcare system is changing, and there are some things that are very positive in it, like the emphasis now on self-care, but also some very negative aspects of it, like what one book calls learned helplessness, where people just automatically look for a medical solution. There was somebody in a workshop I was in this last weekend, and she had shingles, and she had shingles for 14 years on and off, and she said, it just occurred to me a couple months ago that there might be a psychological component to this. I thought it was just a medical condition before that. You know, so people have just had the habit of running to their doctor or their psychologist for a pill for everything, and we've tended to think of everything as a biological event and rather not a spiritual or psychological one. So I think that this picture is gradually changing, and I also predict that there is going to be an enormous conflict in the next 10 years between two very powerful, very rich, and very well-entrenched health groups. And I'm predicting, and I don't know if this is, we'll listen to the show in 5 years, see if I was right or not, but I'm predicting that there will be a big clash between the HMOs, like Kaiser Permanente, because their basic financial well-being is dependent upon you being well. That's why they offer stop smoking classes and weight loss classes and healthy baby classes and Qigong and yoga, and now they're starting to offer EFT and energy psychology as well. The reason they want you to have all these benefits is because you feel you're better, you feel better, you don't go to the doctor's office, so their cost basis drops. So the HMOs are heavily invested in you being well. The drug companies, on the other hand, Big Pharma, is heavily invested in you being sick and getting as many prescriptions as possible. So I think we're going to see this effort on the part of Big Pharma to discredit these kinds of approaches. And I think we're going to see a real push on the part of the HMOs in the next few years to teach these kinds of approaches, these sorts of self-care energy therapies to people. And these are the financial interests of these two groups are in direct opposition to each other, and they're on a collision course. And so that's what I think is likely to shape up in the next while.
I couldn't agree with you more. We recently featured a psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, who's written a book called Medication Madness. I don't know if you're aware of it or not. And he not only talks about the effects of all the medications that are being dispensed so liberally right now, psychiatric medications, but also about some of the shenanigans of drug companies. And so certainly that's something that might interest you.
They make depressing reading, those shenanigans. And in fact, when I write my books, one of the things I have to do is not let the whole book become a tirade against drug companies, because there's so many stories about, you know, GlaxoSmithKline and Wellcome and Burroughs and all these other companies, and the way they manipulate the market and the way they manipulate physicians, where they manipulate the American Medical Association, and it makes very depressing reading. And it's clearly just, you know, the moral corruption of this kind of approach is quite sickening. So it's hard to not be despairing when you read about this. And all these terrible abuses are happening here, and the medicalization of all these problems. Another symptom of this is that psychologists now in California are pressing for the ability to prescribe medication more.
Yes.
So you don't have to be a psychiatrist anymore. You can now be a psychologist, potentially, and prescribe. As though prescribing medication is the measure of your ability to heal. It's such an absurd notion to anybody who knows the totality of healing, but that seems to be where the center of gravity has been for the last while.
Yes, and my husband is very upset about that, and the reason, and I think it's a good one, is that a medical doctor has to spend years getting to know how all the systems in the body work, whereas a psychologist does not. And there are all kinds of complications that can occur that if you don't know how the body works, you don't know how to deal with them.
Yes, and it also sees something like depression or anxiety or PTSD as a biological event, that there's a molecule out of whack, and if we just put that molecule back in place, the person will be fine. And this completely ignores the soul aspect of the person and the deeper aspects of the person and their emotional health. The shaman, if you're depressed, might look for soul loss and that you've lost part of your soul and that you need to go do soul retrieval. You know, that's a very different paradigm from the biological one, which says, let's just give the person a serotonin reuptake inhibitor and treat them that way. And when either of these things, if you ignore the value of the medications and just do the soul work, or if you just do the soul work, you know, either one by itself is not the whole picture. And we have to really be open to what biological medicine can give us, but also what all these unseen energy and spiritual aspects of our being have to do with our health. Because the effects, again, of the spiritual aspects are enormous.
Well, I had intended to emphasize here, and I think it's important to segue off of what you just said, that you're not dissing conventional medicine. You are actually saying that there's a place for it, and you speak to that specifically in soul medicine, but that we need to add or revive soul medicine so that they can work together.
Yes, and in fact, there's a section in the back of the book, there's a chapter near the end, I think it's chapter 14, of soul medicine, where we have a chapter called How to Find Your Ideal Practitioner. And we talk there about, we're very concerned, for example, about fraud in energy medicine. if I'm going to go to a neurosurgeon, for example, I get a board-certified neurosurgeon. I want somebody who has the credential. And there are very few similar credentials in energy medicine. So we're trying to make sure in that last chapter of soul medicine that we give people the knowledge base to where you can have some discernment about how to pick an energy practitioner who's knowledgeable. But then also we talk about how to work with both your energy medicine practitioner and also with your conventional medicine practitioner. The two should work harmoniously for your health. And knowing how to pick the right energy healer and also knowing how to work with that person and with your doctor, we think are very important skills.
Yes, yes. So you say that even though the movement may look small today, treatment with soul medicine is a powerful trend and it's rapidly transforming every current assumption about wellness, and that may open the door to health options for our children that we can only begin to imagine today. And it's time for us to end our show, Dr. Dawson Church. I cannot thank you enough for the work that you're doing in the world and bringing all of this to light with such rigorous attention to detail so that we can open ourselves to new ways of living healthily on this earth. Thank you so much.
Oh, my passion is there, and my mind and my heart are all behind this. So I mean, also, if there are any veterans listening who want to be part of this stress project research, you know, they get six free sessions in the course of the research. So I just encourage you to let people know about that possibility as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right, well, I look forward to the next book.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Join us each Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time for Full Power Living. And next week I'm going to be talking about energy vampires that you may encounter in dating with conscious dating author David Steele of the Relationships Institute. By the way, David has taken his own advice about conscious dating. He's getting married next week. Congratulations to David. I hope you enjoy the special programs we've put together for you to listen to while I'm cavorting in the South Pacific. Thanks for your support of Full Power Living. I'm your host, Eileen Dillon, thanking you for listening and reminding you to pay attention to what you want to become and not to what you want to overcome.